Supposing that a man had to be found, and you could discover in what house he lived, would not that be a great step towards the discovery of the man himself?
Certainly.
And now reason intimates to us, as at our first beginning, that we should seek the good, not in the unmixed life, but in the mixed.
True.
There is greater hope of finding that which we are seeking in the life which is well mixed than in that which is not.
Far greater.
Then now let us mingle, Protarchus, at the same time offering up a prayer to Dionysus or Hephaestus, or whoever is the god who presides over the ceremony of mingling.
By all means.
Are not we the cupbearers? And here are two fountains which are flowing at our side. One, which is pleasure, may be likened to a fountain of honey. The other, wisdom, a sober draught in which no wine mingles, is of water unpleasant but healthful. Out of these we must seek to make the fairest of all possible mixtures.
Certainly.
Tell me first, should we be most likely to succeed, if we mingled every sort of pleasure with every sort of wisdom?
Perhaps we might.
But I should be afraid of the risk, and I think that I can show a safer plan.
What is it?
One pleasure was supposed by us to be truer than another, and one art to be more exact than another.
Certainly.
There was also supposed to be a difference in sciences, some of them regarding only the transient and perishing, and others the permanent and imperishable and everlasting and immutable, and when judged by the standard of truth, the latter, as we thought, were truer than the former.
Very good and right.
If, then, we were to begin by mingling the sections of each class which have the most of truth, will not the union suffice to give us the loveliest of lives, or shall we still want some elements of another kind?
I think that we ought to do what you suggest.
Let us suppose a man who understands justice, and has reason as well as understanding about the true nature of this, and of all other things.
We will suppose such a man.
Will he have enough of knowledge, if he is acquainted only with the divine circle and sphere, and knows nothing of our human spheres and circles, but uses only divine circles and measures in the building of a house?
The knowledge which is only superhuman, Socrates, is ridiculous in man.
What do you mean? Do you mean that you are to throw into the cup and mingle the impure and uncertain art which uses the false measure and the false circle?
Yes, we must, if any of us is ever to find his way home.
And am I to include music, which, as I was saying just now, is full of guesswork and imitation, and is wanting in purity?
Yes, I think that you must, if human life is to be a life at all.
Well, then, suppose that I give way, and, like a doorkeeper who is pushed and overborne by the mob, I open the door wide, and let knowledge of every sort stream in, and the pure mingle with the impure.
I do not know, Socrates, that any great harm would come of having them all, if only you have the first sort.
Well, then, shall I let them all flow into what Homer poetically terms a meeting of the waters?
By all means.
I have let them in, and now I must return to the fountain of pleasure, for we were not permitted to begin by mingling in a single stream the true portions of both according to our original intention, but the love of all knowledge constrained us to let all the sciences flow in together before the pleasures.
Quite true.
And now the time has come for us to consider about the pleasures also, whether we shall in like manner let them go all at once, or at first only the true ones.
It will be by far the safer course to let flow the true ones first.
Let them flow, then, and now, if there are any necessary pleasures, as there were arts and sciences necessary, must we not mingle them?
Yes, the necessary pleasures should certainly be allowed to mingle.
The knowledge of the arts has been admitted to be innocent and useful always, and if we say of pleasures in like manner, that all of them are good and innocent for all of us at all times, we must let them all mingle.
What shall we say about them, and what course shall we take?
Do not ask me, Protarchus, but ask the daughters of pleasure and wisdom to answer for themselves.
How?
Tell us, O beloved, shall we call you pleasures, or by some other name, would you rather live with or without wisdom? I am of opinion that they would certainly answer as follows.
How?
They would answer, as we said before, that for any single class, to be left by itself pure and isolated is not good, nor altogether possible, and that if we are to make comparisons of one class with another and choose, there is no better companion than knowledge of things in general, and likewise the perfect knowledge, if that may be, of ourselves in every respect.
And our answer will be, in that ye have spoken well.
Very true. And now let us go back and interrogate wisdom and mind. Would you like to have any pleasures in the mixture? And they will reply, what pleasures do you mean?
likely enough.
And we shall take up our parable and say, do you wish to have the greatest and most vehement pleasures for your companions in addition to the true ones? Why, Socrates, they will say, how can we, seeing that they are the source of 10,000 hindrances to us? They trouble the souls of men, which are our habitation, with their madness. They prevent us from coming to the birth, and are commonly the ruin of the children which are born to us, causing them to be forgotten and unheeded. But the true and pure pleasures, of which you spoke, know to be of our family, and also those pleasures which accompany health and temperance, and which every virtue, like a goddess, has in her train to follow her about wherever she goes, mingle these and not the others. There would be great want of sense in anyone who desires to see a fair and perfect mixture, and to find in it what is the highest good in man, and in the universe, and to divine what is the true form of good. There would be great want of sense in his allowing the pleasures, which are always in the company of folly and vice, to mingle with mind in the cup. Is not this a very rational and suitable reply, which mind has made, both on her own behalf, as well as on the behalf of memory and true opinion?
Most certainly.
And still there must be something more added, which is an necessary ingredient in every mixture.
What is that?
Unless truth enter into the composition, nothing can truly be created or subsist.
Impossible.
Quite impossible. And now you and Philebus must tell me whether anything is still wanting in the mixture, for to my way of thinking the argument is now completed, and may be compared to an incorporeal law, which is going to hold fair rule over a living body.
I agree with you, Socrates.
And may we not say with reason that we are now at the vestibule of the habitation of the good?
I think that we are.
What, then, is there in the mixture which is most precious, and which is the principal cause? Why such a state is universally beloved by all? When we have discovered it, we will proceed to ask whether this omnipresent nature is more akin to pleasure or to mind.
Quite right. In that way we shall be better able to judge.
And there is no difficulty in seeing the cause which renders any mixture either of the highest value or of none at all.
What do you mean?
Every man knows it.
What?
He knows that any want of measure and symmetry in any mixture, whatever, must always of necessity be fatal, both to the elements, and to the mixture, which is then not a mixture, but only a confused medley which brings confusion on the possessor of it.
Most true.
And now the power of the good has retired into the region of the beautiful, for measure and symmetry are beauty and virtue all the world over.
True.
Also we said that truth was to form an element in the mixture.
Certainly.
Then, if we are not able to hunt the good with one idea only, with three we may catch our prey. Beauty, symmetry, truth are the three, and these taken together we may regard as the single cause of the mixture, and the mixture as being good by reason of the infusion of them.
Quite right.
And now, Protarchus, any man could decide well enough whether pleasure or wisdom is more akin to the highest good, and more honorable among gods and men.
Clearly, and yet perhaps the argument had better be pursued to the end.
We must take each of them separately in their relation to pleasure and mind, and pronounce upon them, for we ought to see to which of the two they are severally most akin.
You are speaking of beauty, truth, and measure.
Yes, Protarchus, take truth first, and, after passing in review mind, truth, pleasure, pause a while and make answer to yourself as to whether pleasure or mind is more akin to truth.
There is no need to pause, for the difference between them is palpable. Pleasure is the veriest impostor in the world, and it is said that in the pleasures of love, which appear to be the greatest, perjury is excused by the gods, for pleasures, like children, have not the least particle of reason in them, whereas mind is either the same as truth, or the most like truth, and the truest.
Shall we next consider measure, in like manner, and ask whether pleasure has more of this than wisdom, or wisdom than pleasure?
Here is another question which may be easily answered, for I imagine that nothing can ever be more immoderate than the transports of pleasure, or more in conformity with measure than mind and knowledge.
Very good, but there still remains the third test. Has mind a greater share of beauty than pleasure, and is mind, or pleasure, the fairer of the two?
No one, Socrates, either wake or dreaming, ever saw or imagined mind or wisdom to be in aught unseemly, at any time, past, present, or future.
Right.
But when we see someone indulging in pleasures, perhaps in the greatest of pleasures, the ridiculous or disgraceful nature of the action makes us ashamed, and so we put them out of sight, and consign them to darkness, under the idea that they ought not to meet the eye of day.
Then, Protarchus, you will proclaim everywhere, by word of mouth to this company, and by messengers bearing the tidings far and wide, that pleasure is not the first of possessions, nor yet the second, but that in measure, and the mean, and the suitable, and the like, the eternal nature has been found.
Yes, that seems to be the result of what has been now said.
In the second class is contained the symmetrical, and beautiful and perfect or sufficient, and all which are of that family.
True.
And if you reckon in the third class mind and wisdom, you will not be far wrong, if I divine aright.
I dare say.
And would you not put in the fourth class the goods which we were affirming to appertain specially to the soul, sciences, and arts and true opinions as we call them? These come after the third class, and form the fourth, as they are certainly more akin to good than pleasure is.
Surely.
The fifth class are the pleasures which were defined by us as painless, being the pure pleasures of the soul herself, as we termed them, which accompany some the sciences, and some the senses.
Perhaps.
And now, as Orpheus says, with the sixth generation cease the glory of my song. Here, at the sixth award, let us make an end. All that remains is to set the crown on our discourse.
True.
Then let us sum up, and reassert what has been said, thus offering the third libation to the Savior Zeus.
How?
Philebus affirmed that pleasure was always and absolutely the good.
I understand, this third libation, Socrates, of which you spoke, meant a recapitulation.
Yes, but listen to the sequel. Convinced of what I have just been saying, and feeling indignant at the doctrine, which is maintained, not by Philebus only, but by thousands of others, I affirmed that mind was far better and far more excellent, as an element of human life, than pleasure.
True.
But, suspecting that there were other things which were also better, I went on to say that, if there was anything better than either, then I would claim the second place for mind over pleasure, and pleasure would lose the second place as well as the first.
You did.
Nothing could be more satisfactorily shown than the unsatisfactory nature of both of them.
Very true.
The claims both of pleasure and mind to be the absolute good have been entirely disproved in this argument, because they are both wanting in self-sufficiency, and also inadequacy and perfection.
Most true.
But, though they must both resign in favor of another, mind is 10,000 times nearer, and more akin to the nature of the conqueror than pleasure.
Certainly.
And, according to the judgment which has now been given, pleasure will rank fifth.
True.
But not first. No. Not even if all the oxen and horses and animals in the world by their pursuit of enjoyment proclaim her to be so, although the many trusting in them, as diviners trust in birds, determine that pleasures make up the good of life, and deem the lusts of animals to be better witnesses than the inspirations of divine philosophy.
And now, Socrates, we tell you that the truth of what you have been saying is approved by the judgment of all of us.
And will you let me go?
There is a little which yet remains, and I will remind you of it, for I am sure that you will not be the first to go away from an argument.